In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss fate, trials, and family in An Ember in the Ashes by Sabaa Tahir. And I need to apologize because last time I didn't say it the right way. So, Sabaa Tahir, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I said your name wrong.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
Sorry, I'm already giggling. And today we're going to discuss An Ember in the Ashes by Sabaa Tahir, the winner of our listeners' choice poll, because it is New Year.
Oh, hooray! Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Yay! Woo! We didn't shout about it being New Year as much as we shouted about it being Christmas.
No. New Year's always a letdown anyway, so, you know. Shall we have our first standard disclaimer of 2020?
Yes, we should. And everyone should be surprised that it's exactly the same as every other standard disclaimer. And that's not true. Like 90% of the other standard disclaimers, because sometimes I curse in the middle of them. Standard disclaimer. If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Excellent. Well done.
Yes, thank you.
Benchmark for the year. Thank you very, wonderful. Very much. Love it. Love it.
Yes. Yes. So it's the new year. Hooray.
Yay. Have you had a nice festive period?
Yes. Yes, I have. Thank you very much. I got a very exciting gift for Christmas, and I love it, and it's changing my world.
To be fair, it's changing my world 456 million miles away.
Did you move? Did you move to another planet?
Did you not hear?
That's new for you.
This one has double moons.
Oh.
Yay.
They have three suns?
Oh, you know, only on a Sunday.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. That's good. We're going to change some things up in the new year, right? We've got some plans in the work. We're starting a Goodreads group, so join us there to talk about things.
Yeah, we've set up Fictional Hangover on Goodreads. We've set up as a entity because the Twitter at Fictional Hangover entity seems to be taking over the world.
I'm worried about the sentient podcast. I'm worried what's going to happen. I really think that it is going to take over the world one day.
It's kind of got this whole Terminator, you know, Rise of the Machine vibe going on at the moment.
Yes.
Which seemed to have Gail Carriger quite, you know, tickled. She enjoyed it.
If there's one thing we can do in the world and it's make Gail Carriger laugh, then I think we're winners.
Yes, I'm happy with that. But we do also have the Fictional Hangover group. There is one teeny tiny little question that you need to ask in order to join it. But, you know, all of our listeners are more than welcome to head on over there because we are going to start using it in 2020.
We are. So don't let us let it die, okay? Because we might.
Oh, no. Because the Fictional Hangover Twitter account will just come over and keep it alive, and then it'll use it as its minion, and then we're screwed. Oh, God.
Yeah, okay. So help us keep our sentient websites and podcasts and Twitter handles. Help us keep them in check.
Please.
Because if you don't, they'll take over.
They're spiraling out of control.
Yeah. I know. I'm frightened. I'm frightened for my life.
On a lighter note, shall we discuss the book?
Yeah. Which book? The one I got for Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's talk about that one because it's really good. I'm so excited about it. You know, it's my dream to become a voice actor. And so I now have a book that I talked briefly about, Accents and Dialects for stage and screen. It's written by Paul Meyer. He is a voice coach, and I'm learning accents and dialects.
Cool.
It's great fun.
What are you starting with?
It's great fun. I started with Cockney.
Dick Van Dyke Cockney or actual Cockney?
Actual Cockney. Eliza Doolittle Cockney.
Eliza Doolittle Cockney.
Pygmalion Cockney.
Nice. Nice.
I don't think it's as bad as My Fair Lady.
No.
Eliza Doolittle.
How many times have you said the word governor?
You know, I haven't said it once. Not Ooh. Once in this session. I know.
We need to come up with a phrase that you have to say in different accents. Like one single phrase, and it can just be all the accents in that one phrase.
Ooh, I should do that. And I lied. I did say governors in one of these monologues. What am I? Governors both? I ask you, what am I? I'm one of the undeserving poor. That's what I am. I love it because...
You're learning Victorian Cockney. Oh, that's so nice. Should we crack on?
Yeah, we probably should. We probably should. Okay, so I have some background info.
Yay.
Because of course I do.
Can you do it in the accent of the...
No.
Not no, yet.
Not yet. I haven't practiced enough yet, but I feel like we do need to have a segment now on the show.
Yes, I agree. We need a segment. We need accent of the week. Just to know, just the world can check that you're doing your homework.
Yes. So when should we do it on the episode? Should it be at the very beginning? Should it be at the end? Should it be in the middle?
End.
At the end? Okay, we'll do accent of the week at the end.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, this article that I read with the Chicago Tribune by Elise de los Santos in May of 2015, that's about the time that this book came out. Sabah was asked, was there a particular story or event that sparked the idea, or was it a slow buildup over time? And she mentioned not fitting in and her family being bullied while growing up. And then she adds, as she was working on the international desk for Washington Post, I was reading about all these crazy stories from around the world about some really dark stuff, whether it would be wars in the Middle East, the Sudanese genocide, or the cartel killings in Mexico. I read one particular story. It was about boys in Kashmir who are taken by the local military forces and basically thrown into prison for all manner of charges, and they're never seen again. I have two older brothers. I really adore them, and the idea that they can just be taken from me and thrown into prison and I couldn't get them back, it was really, really disturbing to me. So I started asking the question, if that happened, what would I do? Would I try to get my family back? And that's really where Ember came from. And that's perfect. It's perfect sense.
So this is the listener choice winner for the New Year episode. Thank you very much for the participation in the voting. There will be future listener polls for episodes, so keep your eyes open for those.
Yes, please do.
This was...
But guys, do better next time. Sorry.
You cannot say anything because this book was chosen by you to enter the final. So, Little Missy...
But it was because of Steve West. It was because of Steve West.
So you're blaming Steve West? Do you want me to tell Steve West that you're blaming him for reading Ember in the Ashes?
Yes.
But then,
I think our sentient Twitter handle might take care of that for us.
It probably will. God, that thing can't be trusted. But it might not come across, well, you might not come across in that favourable light.
I probably won't. And it's not to say that I didn't enjoy this book, but this is just not my style of book.
No. See, that's it. When we were talking about the listener poll, we actually... The reason we did genres is because we weren't sure exactly which books we wanted to narrow it down to. And we thought, you know, we cover certain books quite a lot. Certain genres of books is quite a lot. But there's others that aren't really touched upon. Like contemporary isn't a big genre in this podcast, and like higher fantasy, more immersive fantasy isn't covered. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, they were given a chance, and it was given a chance, a fair deal, and it was voted very, you know, nearly unanimously at one point for this.
Yeah.
So, you know. It's not every book is for everyone.
That's right. Every book its reader. That's one of our...
Yeah.
That's one of the podcast's, like, life lessons.
Exactly. I thought it sounded really interesting. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay. I like the sound of this. And I thought with it being set in... I picked up quite a Persian kind of vibe from it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why the Paul pictures were from 300, because of the, you know, it felt appropriate, you know, the Persian army. I kind of got a lot of their vibe from it. And I thought it did sound very interesting. Not to be offensive, but nothing necessarily groundbreaking in terms of premise. But then again, you know, how original are stories these days? You know, it's the way that they're told. Exactly. It's the storyteller. It's the way that they're told, not necessarily what the story is about. Because, you know, how often have we had that conversation about, you know, the typical tropes, ones that annoy us, ones that we love, you know. I'm a sucker for a romance where it's best friends turned into, you know, more than best friends. I like that kind of thing, you know.
Oh,
I do love it.
I like an enemies to lovers trope.
Yes. Yes. And if it's set in Regency England, I'm all over it. I'm terrible when it comes to Regency romance. Judge me not. I own it with pride. I love those type of things.
So I don't want anyone to think that I hated this book, because I didn't. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it at all. It's just not, it's outside of my wheelhouse, and it's not something that I will probably go back and read over again, where some other things I have read too many times to count. But I enjoyed the story. I did.
Yeah. I thought Lyra and Elias were certainly very interesting protagonists.
Yes.
Possibly
definitely.
Other minor characters I could have lived without knowing at all. Superfluous
to requirements. There were quite a few characters. There were a lot of characters in this book.
Yeah. I do remember walking around listening to it. And it was in the middle of a city centre, and I was on the way to the university campus, and they had a Christmas market at the time as well, and it was just noise everywhere. So I had to turn the volume up, and I was like, eh? Who's this person? And I remember having to, like, you know, go back a little bit to try and fathom out who these people were. So it was very character heavy, but I liked it. I did like it. I did enjoy it. But yeah, it's something where I don't think I'll necessarily go back and read again. But I am glad I did read it.
Mm-hmm.
Should we dive into the summary?
I'm curious. Yeah, we should. We should do that.
What are you curious about? Sorry.
Well, I was going to say I'm curious if I would like the rest of the series more, like after this sets everything up. Maybe as the series progresses, I will enjoy it more than I did this one.
Yeah.
But again, that's not to say that I didn't enjoy the book, but I have enjoyed other books more than this one.
And that's fine. And, you know, I think there needs to be a big reveal, like a big ooh moment. We'll get to that. I think we'll certainly talk about that kind of, like, what will keep us drawn in.
I think so.
As we go through. So let's cover the summary and then we'll no doubt get into that.
Yes. Lyra lives with her brother Darren and their grandparents in the city of Sarah within the Marshal Empire. They are scholars and thusly considered second-class citizens by the ruling marshals. One day, an elite group of warriors come to arrest Darren, accusing him of being part of the resistance. Chaos ensues, and their grandparents are killed. Darren is taken away, and Lyra flees for her life.
Feeling guilty for what she considers cowardly behavior, Lyra decides she must find the resistance and enlist their help to save her brother. They have to help, as he was one of them. When Lyra finds a group of resistance fighters, they agree to help her, but only after they learn who her parents were. Ooh, who were they?
Ooh.
Well, Lyra is the daughter of the legendary former resistance leaders who were betrayed and killed many years ago.
Elias Veturius, a student at the Black Cliff Academy, is making preparations to escape. It is an offense punishable by death if he is caught. And indeed, we meet him as he and his company are searching for the latest runaway, a 10-year-old boy. Elias has been in training to become a Mask, one of the elite military warriors who keep the peace and hunt the resistance members. They are called Masks for the silver mask that they always wear, which eventually melds itself to the wearer's skin. Elias's, however, can still be removed, which is interesting. Elias's plans to desert are ruined when the augurs, immortal holy people, who happen to be terrifying and can read your mind, choose him for the trials, which will select the next martial emperor.
Ooh. Helene, a fellow mask and Elias's best friend, is also selected to participate in the trials, along with two other vicious classmates, twin brothers Marcus and Zach. Elias is favoured to win the trials as his grandfather is a legendary military commander and he's also top of his class. However, his mother, who just so happens to be the ruthless bitch of a commandant of Blackcliff Academy, she hates Elias with every ounce of her being and is hoping, scheming for a different result.
The Resistance agrees to help Lyra on the condition that she infiltrate Blackcliff Academy as a spy to hunt for information. However, to be placed in the academy, she has to be sold as a slave. She must save Darren, and this is the only way to do it, so she agrees. She is sold into the service of the Commandant, who strips her of her name, her dignity, and her pride through violence and vitriol.
She's such a lovely lady.
Pleasant woman.
Yeah.
Pleasant. She's pleasant.
Lyra, or as she is now called, Slave Girl, does not have an easy time. The Commandant is harsh, cruel, and relishes the pain of others. Small offences are punished, there's no leeway. Her slaves are nothing and could easily be replaced. Slowly, Lyra makes friends with the kitchen girl and reluctantly cook, who becomes, if not a friend, an acquaintance. We learn that the kitchen girl's name is Izzy, and although we never learn the cook's true name, we do find out that she knew Lyra's parents. Cook was once part of the Resistance, an explosive expert, who was caught and sold into service. Kitchen Girl lost her eye at the age of 5, paying the price for Cook's mistakes.
Yikes.
Yeah. It was horrifying.
But Cook, you probably shouldn't have tried to poison everyone.
Well, there is that. And that bit was horrible. Absolutely horrible.
It was. Yikes. While Lyra performs her duties in the city, she meets up with the Resistance members who sent her to Blackcliff. Mazen, Resistance leader, who turns out to be terrible. Sana, a Resistance member sympathetic to Lyra. Kenan, her handler, who she develops feelings for. And Spiro, a blacksmith who Darren worked with. There are several others, but these are the most important ones. She also crosses paths with Elias, finally, as she has to deliver a message to him. Elias, being not a garbage person, helps Lyra even though, as a mask, he's supposed to be her enemy. He brings her medicine after his horrible mother carves her initial, a giant letter K, into her chest. He helps her sneak back into Blackcliff and pretends to plan to have his way with her to protect her from his mother. She is terrible. He is not.
He has to face 4 trials during the Empress selection that we learned about earlier, which actually happens concurrently with Lyra's story. But for the purpose of this summary, we've just decided to do it this way. It makes much more sense. In the first trial, he sees everyone he's ever killed and will ever kill, which, you know, makes him into less of a garbage person. The second trial pits him and Helene against mythical creatures that are making their way back into the human world. They also apparently bestow powers upon people, as Helene gains the ability to heal through song.
Speaking of Helene, we also find out that she's in love with Elias, but he can't deal with it because they're best friends. He also kind of has feelings for her, but he doesn't want to ruin their friendship. He also kind of has a thing for Lyra, which disgusts Helene because she's a scholar slave. During the third trial, the 4 aspirants are forced to fight each other to the death. The aspirants, I don't think we even mentioned this, the aspirants are the people who are in the trials. That's their title. So, during the third trial, the 4 aspirants are forced to fight each other to the death, which is terrible. Marcus kills his twin, which is even more terrible than just murdering all your schoolmates. Just as Elias is about to kill Helene, which is also terrible, it is revealed that she is wearing a special armor under her leathers, which disqualifies her. Even though she won that armor after another trial, and it has fused with her body like their masks do. It's convenient that Elias doesn't have to murder his best friend, and also that his best friend is disqualified. It seems that something is afoot here, and Elias begins to realize it. The augurs have a plan and are pulling everyone's strings. Because Elias was willing to kill his best friend, he's named winner of this trial and receives a very interesting prize. Liar! Yikes.
Oh, honestly. Oh, we'll give it a sit. Anyway, instead of taking her as his prize, they have the special night that all rom-coms have, where the two main characters, who are also love interests, spend all night talking. He mentions that he dug a secret escape tunnel out of the school, which Lia realises will be the key bit of information the Resistance needs to get her brother out of prison. How, we do not know. Lia also learns another bit of information that the Resistance could use, that the Commandant is working with someone called the Nightbringer, who is a djinn, one of those mythical creatures floating around in the background, who was actually the last djinn. Many, 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 many years ago, the scholars conquered all the rest of the djinn. Now the Nightbringer wants to destroy all the scholars. And hey, the Commandant wants that too. Perfect team.
Yes, indeed.
They're not going to get any teamwork awards, though, are they?
They are not. They are not. Because they're awful. The Commandant takes Lia captive after this special night and uses her in the final trial to make Elias suffer even more, because she's a terrible, terrible person. The first of the aspirants to kill Lia will be named Emperor. What a great trial.
It's simple.
Simple, just murder this slave girl. Helene knocks Marcus out, thinking that Elias will kill Lia so he can become emperor. But of course, Elias won't kill Lia. And then he and Helene get into an argument. Marcus, meanwhile, throws a knife at Lia and the augur holding her, and they both go down in a giant pool of blood. Marcus is named emperor, Helene his second, or his blood shrike, and Elias is sentenced to death by beheading. Yikes! What an ending.
But wait! That's not the end.
There's more!
But wait! There's more! With this story, you also get these steak knives. No. That's not the end, because Lia isn't actually dead. The augur was hit by the knife. Not Lia, but augurs can't die. So they pretend that Lia was killed and take her away to safety. What the heck is going on with these augurs?
What are their plans? I don't know.
Claire looks around, mystified. They take her to the Resistance and Lia gives them her information. But it's not as helpful as she thought it would be. Turns out Mazen has been trying to get her killed the entire time she's been working for him. He is a big fat liar. And didn't really need any of the information she was able to bring him. Asshole. He makes Kenan take her away to kill her. But he doesn't. And they make out a little bit. Oh, nothing makes you feel like a bit of necking. He gives her the perfect opportunity to escape, but she doesn't. Instead, she returns to Blackcliff with a plan to save Elias.
Her plan involves using Cook's skills as an explosives expert to create distractions everywhere during the execution. As Helene brings the axe down on Elias, because yes, as Bloodstrike, she's the Emperor's murderer. So, she has to kill her best friend, and as she's bringing the axe down, Lia's non-lethal explosions go off, and they're able to escape. Surprisingly, Helene helps them by giving Elias his weapons back, but promises that the next time they see each other, they're going to be enemies. Lia makes Elias swear to take her to the prison where her brother is being held, and to help her break him out.
Fate Black.
Setting up for book two!
Yeah.
And or the rest of the series.
Well, is it the fourth book coming out soon? I think it's book four.
Is it coming out or did it just come out?
At time of recording, I do not know.
Ooh. I know, let's check Goodreads. Okay, so book three is already out, and book 4 is not expected until 2021. So we got a little bit. That's the end of that book.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite part?
Probably Lyra realizing that she isn't a coward or weak. It took a long, long time to get there. Like a long,
long
time.
It really
did. It took her dying. Yeah. Almost twice, at least.
Yeah.
And, you know, carving into her flesh and being beaten a lot and a couple of attempted rapes and putting up with some seriously bad shit for her to go,
yeah,
yeah, I'm not a coward or weak.
She just feels really badly about that very first encounter that we had with her, that, you know, she lets her grandparents get killed and her brother taken away, and she just kind of didn't do anything. So
I know, but at the same
time, to get back from that.
You know, she's not a trained military person or a trained resistance person. You know, she's just relived her life. She's done as her grandparents have asked her to do. What is she supposed to do? Pick up the butter knife and fight back? I mean, yeah, that might be somebody's instincts.
Right.
But she's never been bred. In fact, she's probably been bred the opposite way, but given who her parents were.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, it's forgivable. So I do,
it is, and
I do
she doesn't realise that.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for her. And she's got the voice of Darren through her head. I know I didn't say this in the summary, but throughout the book, she's got Darren's head. She's got Darren's voice throughout in her head, but her projection of Darren's voice saying, help me, Lyra, help me, get me out of here. That's her projections of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just feeding everything. It's just a giant festering circle of guilt and... Yeah, she really needs to seek some professional help.
She does.
She's got survivor guilt.
She really does. And that, I mean, a lot of her character is based on that. But it seems like she's growing out of it by the end of it.
Yeah, I'm glad that wasn't dragged out too much. I mean, it was, it did take the whole book for it to happen. But it could have easily gone into book 2 and book 3. Without having read them yet, it had that potential.
Okay.
What about you? Was anything stand out for you?
I enjoyed the trials.
Yeah.
I think I liked Elias. I liked Elias's story much more than I liked Lyra's story.
Was it because of Steve West?
It was probably because of Steve West. But anyway, I liked the trials, especially the third one. When...
Oh, the battle.
Yeah, when they have to kill their friends.
That was really atmospheric, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You can imagine just the fog, the thick fog, not seeing anything, not hearing anything, and then all of a sudden, like, the skittering of stones, and you can see it what it would be like on the screen, can't you? Like, and then suddenly the figures coming out of the mist, not knowing who or what they are, and then... going for them.
Yep. Yeah. And then having to kill them.
Yeah. That was very cinematic. I did enjoy that one. Not for the brutality of it, but for the picture.
That part, it was really well written, that trial.
Mm. The fourth trial, though, what did you think of that one?
I can't say that I loved the fourth trial, except for the fact that I kind of, like, you know, I always like the bad guys, so I kind of like the Commandant setting everything up where they have to kill Lyra, but it just seemed like a means to an end. Like, well, we have to get this girl out of the way, so let's put her in the trial and everyone has to try to murder her.
It was probably the weakest of the trials. Like, I mean, if we talk through the trials for a second, so the first one, they get dropped off in random places in the middle of nowhere and have to face the biggest fears.
And it's places that they're terrified of what's going on around them.
Yeah, so we discussed Elias's in the summary is the people he's killed and the people he's going to kill, and it's just a field of dead bodies, including Lyra's and Helene's and a few others. Now, Helene's fear is heights, and she was dropped off at some wicked height in some kind of huge eagle-esque bird's nest with babies. We don't find out what Marcus and Zax are, but they're kind of like side characters with a bit more to do. And that was interesting. because it certainly sets up Elias's character for the fact he has no taste for the life he's essentially being thrown into.
Yeah. He clearly does not want to be a mask. He doesn't want to be a part of this. He just wants to escape, which is his whole thing in the beginning, trying to escape.
And then the second trial was...
Oh, that's the one with all of the mythical creatures, the djinn and the ifrits and all of, like, and they have to figure out how to kill these mythical creatures.
Oh, yes, and one of them's through singing a song.
Yeah, and then that's how Helene gets her abilities to sing you back to health. Which is interesting.
Yeah. There's a couple where they just need the heads lopped off. That's my default for anything. Yeah. If you don't know how to kill it, take its head off. It's, you know,
yeah, unless it's with fire.
Unless it's a hydra, the chances are it's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite good. That was the one where they were, like, down the mountainside, wasn't it? Like, the wall of the cliff being chased.
Or was that at the beginning with... Helene's trial, because that happens there. Hard to say.
No, that was when they were in Blackcliff and the friends are coming after them as well. So it's not just the girls and the mythical creatures, it's the friends that have been ordered to kill them too. And they're going through Blackcliff and they're trying to find a defensible position. And they end up going over the parapet in to try and get into the deserts. And then when they get into the deserts, that's where the mythical creatures... start.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
En masse, trying to get them, yeah. I thought that was interesting. That included the mythical creatures, but we'd already met them.
Yeah.
With Lyra, because Lyra's kind of haunted by the ghouls. The ghouls feed off of guilt.
Yes.
And that was interesting. That was probably the most fantastical aspect for me of the book.
Yeah.
Without the... them. I don't know how fantasy I would put this.
I think that it's fantasy in that it's set in a world that is not our own.
Yeah, I mean, the augurs, I suppose, also constitute with their immortality and their connective minds, which made me think of the LGMs off Toy Story, you know, the hive mind.
Yeah.
Because that fits.
It does. It fits in nicely.
And then the third trial we've already discussed was probably the most atmospheric. The fourth was a letdown for me.
It was, yeah.
It was like, oh, you've gone through all of this strength and courage and ability and knowledge and, yeah, we're just going to stick a slave girl up there and you just got to throw a knife at her, basically, you're fine. Yeah, you're an emperor. What?
Yeah, whoever can kill her becomes the emperor. Of course, they had all won one of the trials up to that point, so whoever wins two trials is the emperor. So
that's like a football match going to penalties and winning on penalties. It's kind of like a bit of a... it's a bit of a wet fart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I also liked Elias's birth story.
Yeah.
That happens at the very end. And we find out, you know, we know the Commandant is a terrible human being. She's a garbage person. And we know that, like, she gives Elias up for adoption. But it, like, you kind of get the idea throughout the story that she's like, I don't want this child. And she just kind of throws him to the side. But she actually kind of suffered with it a little bit. Like, she was planning on just... you know, having the baby, killing the baby, and going on her way. But she ended up, like, developing feelings for the baby and then finding a villager wherever she was who seemed to be caring enough to take care of it. And now it's Elias, and now here he is.
Yeah, and I can't remember if it's explicitly said in the book, but you kind of get the impression with the Commandant that one of the reasons she hates Elias so much is because he... made her have some kind of tender reaction.
Yeah, he made her have feelings. And it's so she hates him.
It's kind of like...
because she's a warrior. She's not supposed to have these feelings.
Well, yeah, but she was... it's like... have some logic. It was a baby. He had no say in the matter. He couldn't persuade you. He just was born. You know, it's... once you're prejudiced though, I suppose, unless sound reasoning. She is not healthy in the mind though, that Commandant.
No. No. How dare you make me have emotion?
Yeah. God, she was a bitch.
Yeah, she was. She's pretty terrible.
Do you know what got on my wick though? I think it worked. I don't enjoy this trope. It's the romantic questioning feelings. Right, there was too much. I realise, I will admit, I love a good romance. I love a friend, an enemy to friend thing. I even love a best friend to romantic. But there's a time and place for it, and I didn't particularly enjoy Helene's romantic feelings toward Elias. It didn't wholly make sense to me from Eliza's perspective. And that's because...
Yeah.
So we are introduced to Elias when they're in these catacombs. And he's hiding, like, a pack of supplies for his impending escape. And Helene stumbles upon him. And Helene is, by the book, rules. You know, she has no grey. She's black and she's white. And to try and put her off, he goes on this... internal explanation to the reader to say, you know, I've never felt this way. She's my friend. I don't see her in any other capacity. I've never looked at her that way. But, you know, I'm going to put her off, so I'm going to give her the look.
Leering.
Exactly. He does the look. And instantly, Helene's like, oh, I'm getting the look. I'm not going to look at what you're doing anymore because I'm getting the look. And he's like, oh, I've given you the look. Now, maybe... I have stirrings in my pants. And is it more than just the look? What the hell?
I don't know.
I didn't get that. It was too much. I like a platonic friendship, and that should have been there. Yes, Elias questioned it a lot, but it was too much. And then it was like, oh, I fancy Lyra. And then Lyra was like, oh, actually, I fancy Elias, but he's a mask. I shouldn't. And, ooh, look, there's Keenan. I'm just going to randomly, for the fact of
seeing... Yeah, she seemed to just like whatever boy looked at her.
Give her any kind of positive attention, yeah. And it's like, calm yourself, love. This isn't the House of Night. You know, not everybody needs to have a romantic tone to it. I struggled with that. I understood Helene's. I thought, that's fine. But... it should have been an unrequited love, the end.
Yeah, I did, however, like when Elias is shouting at her, like, you love me! You love me! Like, just stop! Stop it! You love me, and I don't want you to, so stop.
I can't! It hurts! This is the problem! Blah, blah, blah. I kind of lost sympathy for Helene at that point, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have a feeling that things are going to change with Helene and we're not supposed to like her at all.
Well, now that
do you feel that way?
Yeah, now that she's the Bloodstrike, she's going to be even more fiercely by the book. You know, she's pledged allegiance to Marcus, who was an absolute dick. And, you know, that's kind of like... yeah. I mean, she gives him that one pass and that is literally, for me, that is going to be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, of course she's not going to want to see him run off with this slave girl because, oh my God, it's a slave girl. You can't be in love with a slave girl.
You know how she's a scholar? This I didn't pick up on. So she's a scholar.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't necessarily pick up as, like, a religion per se. I suppose it was given the moon festival that they go to in the book. But what I didn't understand is they were like, oh, you're a scholar, you don't know how to read. Huh?
Yeah, you're a scholar. You're a scholar. That word clearly means something.
Yeah.
But does it? Is it just like...
I don't think being a scholar was explained enough for me. And I don't need a lot of exposition. I don't, but I like context. And I think for me, I needed a little bit more rounding off about the scholars because when when Lyra is listening in on the Commandant and the Nightbringer's conversation, and then later on, Cook gives that really good atmospheric story about the djinn and the scholars.
That was a good story.
That was really, really well done. You find out that the scholars subjugated the djinn and stole all their knowledge. And it's kind of like, well, they've gone from being on high to being the very lowest of the low in the civilization, which I can understand and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you say, a scholar means what precisely? I don't understand exactly what a scholar is, apart from the fact that they are second class citizens.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what a scholar is.
Okay. I'm glad that's not just me.
Yeah.
Who struggled with that?
Do you know something else that I didn't like? That the augurs at separate points tell both Lyra and Elias that they're embers in the ashes.
Yeah.
Like,
it was a little on the nose.
Yeah, and the book is called An Ember, ashes, which implies one, but they both are. I don't know. I do like it, however, when the title of the book comes into play and they say it and it means something.
Yeah.
Don't say it twice. They can't both be An Ember.
I suppose you can be an ember, not the ember. It's an ember.
That's right. It's less specific. Yeah, you're right. I take it back.
Okay, it's all semantics, really, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but I take it back. You're right.
Oh, I'm glad that's being recorded.
Yeah. It's recorded, but that doesn't mean it's going to make it into the episode. Because I hold the power.
Are you going maniacal again?
I'm going maniacal again. No, maniacal. Oh. Yeah, I am. What?
Just waiting for you to rub your hands.
Yes. I feel like when I rub my hands, I have to have a little weaselly voice.
Yeah.
But I also need to be big and evil more.
I suppose it depends. If you're rubbing your hands, that's more of the big muscular kind of oh ha ha. But if you just with your fingers. Yeah.
Then it turns witchy.
I like a good crone.
Yeah. Ooh, maybe that's what I am.
Crone.
You get like a hunchback and like a big eye and a small eye. And knock out some teeth.
Everybody's going to have an ambition in life.
To be a crone when they grow up.
Yeah. Feels achievable.
It is. What are we on to now? Were there any crones in the book? Is that your favorite character? A crone? But there's not one.
Oh, Cook could have been a crone, I suppose.
Cook could have been, yeah.
I did like Cook, actually.
Yeah, me too. She's a good storyteller.
Yeah, I like Cook. But if I'm going to complain about any of the accents, now this isn't to disrespect the narrator, because the narrator was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
What were the names? Steve West and what was the lassie called?
Fiona something. I know it. It's something. Fiona Hardingham.
Hardingham.
Hardingham, if you're using your Cockney accent. Odd again, because we don't say any H's.
Okay, so I really like the cook. She could be a crone.
She could be a crone.
But I will say, I didn't understand the cook's accent. Like, I didn't understand where it was from, and it was a bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit stuttery at points, and I didn't like it. But then that happens in the text as well, because I had to go and look at it to see, like, why is she saying this in this way? Is it the character that she's given to Cook? No, it's written that way, so...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, however, and I thought when we start to hear that really good story that the cook gives them about the djinn and the scholars, I thought, actually, I'm not going to be able to get this monologue because of the accent. But it was spot on, actually. I got quite immersed into it once mm-hmm. it went
yeah,
into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I did too.
And I don't know if maybe it's because Cook didn't say it a lot, that when she did speak, the accent was kind of like, oh, hang on, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of it there in that big chunk.
And if there was one accent, though, I have to say that Fiona Hardingham did a fantastic job on, but I didn't understand why it was the accent it was given, and that was Keenan's Irish accent.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great Irish accent, but I don't understand why he had an Irish accent.
Because his hair was red? I don't know. And it shouldn't... I mean, technically, this is a different world. This is a whole different thing, so there shouldn't be any accents that we can, like, recognize. But there has to be, because we speak languages and we understand them.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting one to pick.
Yeah.
And it was great. She did a great job, but it's just like, why?
Yeah. But then, I don't.
Maybe that's her favorite one to do.
Possibly.
And she's like, you know what? I'm really good at this one, so I'm going to do it.
See, I don't understand, and you might know better the process behind an audiobook narrator, like how much autonomy they have in the accents. How I don't think authors have a lot of say in the matter, it seems to me, from the interviews I've read and heard.
Right.
But it's like, there's obviously producers and directors that are part of the process as well. So it's kind of like, well, how do you decide? If you've just got some text and there is no accenting to that text and there's no accent given, you know, you're not told, this person is red-haired, green-eyed, pale-skinned, and from Ireland. You know, the stereotype. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they have an Irish accent. It's implied. But yeah, like you say, you know, just for having red hair, it could be Scottish. You know?
Could be.
It was an odd choice. I didn't understand it. I suppose Keenan is an Irish name, but it was very jarring for this place that's in the middle of a desert and seems very dry and not the type of place that a ginger person's complexion would be able to withstand without some serious SPF help.
Yeah.
I did like the commandant, though. Can I just say it? Yes. I like the commandant because she was awful. There was no redeeming feature to her. She was horrible.
Yep.
There was no artifice in her character. She was just a nasty, nasty person. I quite liked it.
Yeah. I liked her quite a bit. But I just have to say,
just say it. I know what you're going to say.
That Elias is my favorite, but it's just because of Steve West.
You're such a pervert.
I just like Steve West, okay? I mean, and Elias was kind of a lovable asshole at sometimes, especially when screaming at his best friend, "You love me! Like, stop it!" I like that. He's a little smarmy sometimes, but I don't know. I just like him. I just like Steve West. I'm sorry. Shit.
You need to go to a help group. You know, you need a 12-step program.
Do I?
You're not doing anybody any harm.
I'm not.
No. It's fine.
I haven't, like, sent him things in the mail or anything yet.
I raised my eyebrow at that.
Yeah, I stared off into space at that.
I've just taken a picture of your shame. Do you know who we haven't mentioned at all, actually? And I did quite like him for the short period of time he was in. And I would like to know more about him. And that was, is it Talliman the blacksmith?
Oh, yeah. Spiro Talliman. Yeah. I liked him too.
Like,
because he's just like,
what's these guilt ghouls are following you, liar. Come here, I'll get rid of them for you for a second. You know, you need to calm your shit down. Darian? Yeah, he's cool. He's my apprentice. So it's all good. No, we don't work for the resistance. He's a really good artist, though. I had to hire him. But, you know, we might provide the odd resistance member a blade or two. Bye-bye.
He just, like, sees that there are problems in the world and wants to fix them. He's not on either side. He just wants to make things better.
Yeah.
For his brief bit of time.
Yeah. And it's, again, his character, like, you actually got a physical description of him. And it was wicked standout compared to everybody else. You know, the amount of facial piercings and the tattoos and just the way he styled his hair. Everything was, like, very modern. So, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. I liked him, though.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of character where if you had, like, a side novella prequel of him, I would be quite interested to read.
Yeah, I'd like to hear his story.
Yeah. Did anything, like, jump out and you go, boo?
Nothing said boo. Really, to me. But I did find it odd that Helene developed a healing power. Like, is this a thing in this world that people have, regular human people have powers? Is that something that we're going to see more of?
Yeah. But then it's the same.
I thought it was I don't know.
It was one of those things that kind of stood out a little bit and it was quite jarring. Do you think it was like Liar is the only one who seems to have these ghoul things following her about, which Talamon sees. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, these are just these ghouls. And it's kind of like, well, okay. I don't know. It's the same as with the whole what is a scholar thing. There's certain things within the world that I don't understand its place, because you would think that these ghouls would be a bit more of a common knowledge thing, and the same as with mm-hmm. Helene's magic, which Elias does try and blackmail her silence with at some point. So that was a bit strange. I don't know. I don't mind taking things, like, you know, in this world people are slaves, in this world there are You are taken as a child and you are sent to Blackcliff Academy to be trained as a mask. No ifs, no buts. You're basically stolen from your bed. I don't need exposition on that. But sometimes I do need a little bit of context within other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I wonder, like I said before, like, is this just setting stuff up for stuff that's going to happen later in the series? And maybe other people, we'll find that other people do have powers and, you know, there will be reasons behind things, and maybe we'll find out what's the deal with the scholars and why people think they can't read, and, you know, maybe all of that will come back later and will be explained.
I can understand it being something within the tribes. So Elias is raised for the first, 8 years of his life amongst the tribes, the desert tribes.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the Commandant places him. And I can kind of understand, like, that kind of, like, healing kind of magic and the whole mysticism and the creatures, the things that went bump in the night are real. I can understand them, you know, that being their daily life. You know, they understand and appreciate that. Whereas city folk, it's kind of, like, falling out of common knowledge.
Yeah.
I can understand that. But then Elias was shocked by it as well, and he retained a lot of his history, which is what informed him on, you know, why he wanted to desert the military.
Yeah.
Saying that, though, I don't mind set up to future books at all, because it's what draws you into a series. But I don't like ending a book with some fundamental questions, which are, for me, quite important to understanding the narrative.
Yeah, there's a little bit of stuff that's just kind of left unanswered.
Yeah.
And they needed an answer in the first one.
Yeah. Saying that, though, I mean, I did really enjoy the book. I really, really did. I especially enjoyed the narration. I think this is, for me, this is probably a good example of a book where I would possibly struggle to read it, but didn't struggle to listen to it. And I do have a list of those books that I've had to put down because I just can't read it. It's not drawing me in, but then I've listened to it and I've gone, this is brilliant. Everybody needs to get themselves onto the case of this. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I can provide examples of that. They're usually the unfinished books are on my Goodreads. So yeah, I think it's I really highly recommend this book for me as an audiobook narration. Now I will say as well that the audiobook narrators I listened to were the American release publication. If you were to go on a British or wherever you're listening from, it may not be the same narrators. It may not be Fiona Hardingham and Steve West. So that is the version that I listened to, and that would be my recommendation. Without having heard any other audiobook, I will caveat that.
Yeah. And that's my fault because of...
Your obsession?
Because of Steve West. I don't want to say it's an obsession. But it kind of is an obsession.
It could develop... easily.
I just don't want it to be... I don't want it to become creepy. Like, I just really appreciate him. It's already creepy. You're mouthing it at me. It is very creepy. But he's just so talented. And that, I mean, he's not the only voice actor that I fawn over.
No, no. If January Lavoie was sitting here right now, your tongue would be hanging out and going, please teach me your wisdom, January Lavoie.
Yes, because she is also amazingly phenomenal. Talented.
Wow. But then I could list half a dozen audio narrators that I will actually actively listen to the books simply because it's them.
Right, yes. This one, for me.
Yeah.
Because of Steve West.
You've got a dreamy look in your face. Oh, bless.
I know. Anyway, what? Were you surprised by anything? Maybe we should get back to that and leave my obsession quietly in the corner for a few moments.
It's starting to grow. It's turned into a teenager now. I don't know. I think I've probably already covered it. Like, I agree with the whole Helene is a witch kind of powers
witch.
Thing. You're a witch!
Witch!
But yeah, I think
another
it's the whole...
Steve West book, by the way.
Obsession grows. It's the whole... Yeah, it's the whole ghouls and mystical creatures thing. It's kind of like, well, how is Lyra the only one with them? How do they not... I think it's more less surprises, more I didn't understand, and it's kind of like
okay then is it time?
It's time.
So this time on social media we asked, with a nice description of the two, would you rather be a mask or an auger? On Facebook, 58% of you said that you would rather be a mask, and 42% said auger. Instagram was 63-37. Very heavily mask there. And what about our sentient podcast?
The sentient podcast at Fictional Hangover, no ER. Please come follow us. Join the fun. I'm fearing for my life. It was 100% mask.
I don't know what I would say. Maybe I should wait until we see what some of our friends on social media said. Mihail on Facebook said, auger, please, pulls. If I can use magic, I won't have to learn fighting skills. I would also just make pizzas with magic all day. Good use of magic. Good, like, friendly use of your magic.
I agree.
Don't be evil.
I did actually ask Michal what kind of, you know, if there are pizzas, do we have to reopen the whole pineapple topping pizza debate? He fell on the same side as I do, so kindred spirit, pineapple is a plus.
You like pineapple on pizza?
Yeah.
I don't disagree that it is a topping on pizza. I'm fine with that. I just do not prefer it. But I'm okay with it. I think it's just something about hot pineapple. Like, I really like to eat pineapple, but I don't necessarily like it hot.
Do you know what? It might be the British person in me, but have you ever had a pineapple upside down cake?
I have.
With custard.
But maybe not fresh out of the oven.
You need it warm with hot custard poured over the top. That changes your opinion of warm pineapple. If you were to ask my son, he would tell you my favourite pizza topping is ham and pineapple. It's not, but it's what I tend to have because I know he'll eat it as well.
What is your favourite pizza topping?
I don't really have a favourite one. I just like pizza. I am an unbiased pizza eater.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I could eat a lot of things on pizza. Yeah.
I don't even mind anchovies.
I don't care for anchovies. And I also don't care for mushrooms.
Oh, I love mushrooms.
But I just don't like the texture of a mushroom.
I like chorizo on pizza. A big fan of chorizo. Just in general, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. So there's a place in Seattle that we love to go. It's giant slices of pizza. It's called Talarico's. Maybe we should...
Is it going on the list? Is it going on the list? Is it going on the list?
Yes. We need to have our music. Oh, and here, we would like to ask for Talarico's to know that we exist and that we appreciate their pizza.
And we'll do a live episode from them whilst eating their pizza.
We will. Yes, we will. Just, you have to bring Claire here.
Well, to be fair, there's that many places where we want to do live episodes from that in and around the Seattle area that they could just all chip in. I'll just get a mini box and you can put a couple of pounds in, a couple of dollars.
Yeah. So you wouldn't really have to pay that much. Talarico's.
No.
I bet that Starbucks would pay, probably foot most of the bill.
Do you know the amount of Starbucks I drink?
Yeah. Okay. So Talarico's, Starbucks, Waffle House, all of you guys just chip in to get Claire over here. All right, let's go on. Ashley on Facebook said, I have a dream of one day headbutting someone and the mask makes it easier. Very good.
I think that has to be my favorite.
Yeah, it's a very good response.
Just the honesty. Yeah. Steph on Facebook says, I'm not very athletic. Being a skilled warrior would be awesome, but I like the idea of being able to see things and being magical. At Headzilla on Twitter says, give me the mask, please. I'd love to be a deadly warrior rather than the bumbling klutz I am in reality. I swear, giving me anything sharper than a butter knife right now and I'll be -2 fingers. Plus, I haven't got the patience to be mystical. It takes too long.
Very good. But what if it was just you, who you are? And you just already knew how to be mystical. It was built in.
Yeah. I just want to be able to go click my fingers and ta-da, magic.
Yeah, that would be.
But they're not particularly magical per se, are they? They're like, oh, we see into the future. We have this.
Yeah.
I found it very funny when they're like, oh, don't think about this thing. Don't think about this thing. And the augurs are pop counting to go, that's not how it works. We don't pick up the words. It's kind of like intent. And, you know, it takes a little while for us to figure it out. And they're like, don't think about the pink elephant. Don't think about the pink elephant. And you're like, that's not how it works, Elias.
No, it's not how it works.
I felt sorry for them. You could feel the frustration the augurs had at that point. They're like, fuck's sake, man.
Well, maybe if they had a little bit of exposition and we knew more about them, Elias wouldn't be so frustrated. Oh, I mean, they wouldn't be so frustrated with Elias because he would know how their minds work.
They need like a little card to give out, which is the rules of being an augur, and just like hand it over and go, okay, rule one, we can read minds, but it's more intent and emotion, not actual words. Two, don't look us in the eyes. We're very, very phobic about that. You know, it's one of our foibles. We know the red and blotchy.
Number three, we can't die.
Yeah, yes. Use us as pin cushions. It's all good. It hurts.
We struggle with it sometimes.
Four. Yes, we do the woo woo.
Direct knife. Yes. Oh man. Okay, so which one? Which one do you pick?
I'm gonna go mask. Why the hell not? I wouldn't mind some grace in my life and being able to, you know, stab people with some scimitars at the same time would be quite fun. Yeah. I imagine I have no intent in really doing that in life.
I like the idea of being an augur, but I also, for costuming purposes, like the idea of being a mask.
You get all fancy with your mask on a weekend.
Yes.
What if you needed glasses? Or did not have that issue here?
What?
If you needed glasses, how would you put your mask on? Or would your mask have to melt to your face and then you'd have to, you know, have the lenses put into the mask? What if your prescription changes?
Or... Oh, no, you just have to put the glasses on top. I was going to say, what if you put your glasses on and then your mask on? Because that's how... I mean, you'd probably do it that way, right? Would you put your glasses on after your mask or your mask on first?
Well, considering I have been trying to wear my son's Iron Man mask and I have to take the glasses off.
Well, maybe they've all had LASIK. They all have perfect vision.
Or glasses haven't been invented in this world.
So they're all just blind and stumbling around.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to be a kick-ass mask-wearing warrior. Kung Fu.
And then I will be an augur reading your thoughts and emotions.
But not actually the words.
No. Cool. And taking knives.
Cool.
Yeah. Taking knives and pulling strings.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I haven't got the patience to, you know, for that kind of machinization the word, you know, like just get it done. Just play it speaking, please.
No, you gotta play the long game. You're an immortal. You have to play the long game.
I would be the most impatient immortal ever.
What's our next question?
Would you rather be a mask or a scholar?
This is a really difficult question to answer in that we don't really know a lot about the scholars.
Yeah.
Could it be like a back in time with the djinn, stealing the djinn's powers, stealing the djinn's knowledge?
You can pick whatever time scale you want to be in. Free reign.
You know, I think I would still choose to be a mask. Because I didn't pick mask the first time, so I'm going to pick mask this time.
Well, I'm not going to change my answer.
Yeah.
Though the Moon Festival did look kind of fun.
It did. It was very... It was... Kind of made me think of like a New Year's Eve party. Like a big fancy to-do.
Yeah. They just need some fireworks. Be good.
Yeah.
A bit of dancing. Yeah. Moon cakes. It's all good.
I want to eat a moon cake.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a recipe for them somewhere. I've baked a lot lately. I don't mind baking some moon cakes too.
Yeah, you should make us some moon cakes.
Next question.
Next question. Would you rather be carved up and infected?
What?
Yeah, it's a good question. Would you rather be carved up and infected? Or... have your eye gouged out?
Do I get to pick the place I'm being carved up, what I'm being carved up with to say? Do I have access to antibiotics? Is it my left eye or my right eye? Oh my God.
I mean, whatever you have to do to choose.
Well, I'm going to be... this is grim. God, it's been a while since we've had a grim one, though, isn't it? Do you have an answer?
I just, like, how long does the infection last? Because when Laya was carved up and she got an infection, you know, she was not, it was not great.
No.
But.
It was very dusty where she was.
Yeah. And she was able to get better. But then Izzy, with her missing eye, I mean, that happened when she was 5, and now she's fine with it. I mean, she's not fine with it.
Well.
She would rather have 2 eyes. But she seems to be doing well with her eye gouged out.
You wouldn't be able to drive,
closing
though.
Closing your eye and practicing?
I am. You see, I've got 1 long-sighted eye and 1 short-sighted eye, so it's kind of like... Either way, I'll still need a prescription.
Yeah, me too. My eyes are different, and one of them is worse than the other.
Yeah.
So maybe I should just pop out that really bad one.
Ooh, you could get a glass eye like Columbo, and then everybody would be like, which eye is it, the fake one, the left one or the right eye, while you're busy solving murders with a basset hound?
Yes, could do that. Yeah, I'm going to have my eye gouged out, I guess.
Like now or when you were 5?
Probably as a child. If I grew up with it and was used to it. If you had to pop my eye out now, like, I don't know how I would handle it.
I just seeing something coming towards my eye like that would freak me out. Oh, I can't even watch that kind of thing on TV.
But also imagine watching someone carve into your body.
I would hopefully pass out with the pain, if I'm honest.
I feel like the eye gouging would be quicker than being carved up. So if I could just have it out and done versus slowly being carved, I feel like that might be worse.
I don't like it either.
I don't like either either. That's a bad question. Sorry.
It's awful.
I'll claim responsibility for this question.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if you are responsible, but I'll go for it. I don't... I get lost in our conversations sometimes. It's like we've got a hive mind. We're August.
We are. What's the next question?
I'm going to answer. This is a difficult decision. I'm going to say carved up and infected. Yeah. I can't do the eye thing. It's freaking me out even thinking about it.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to have a shit ton of antibiotics, though. Like, all of them. I'll go get some blue cheese and start rubbing it on. Just, you know. Ugh. I won't, because that's just nasty. Ugh. No, I think I'd probably rather have the carved up an infection. Oh, God. Okay. I don't like that question. Ew. Right,
no,
next one. Would you rather kill your twin or your best friend?
That is not any better.
It's not. Who asked this one?
That's me again. I always take things too far.
I mean, sometimes it's good.
Not this time.
Sucks.
How do I feel about my twin? Do I like my twin?
Fair. You're indifferent? I don't know. You, it's your relationship. I don't know how you feel about your twin. What did I watch? Oh, did you see A Simple Favour with Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Complete spoilers. I'm about to say a spoiler. And Blake Lively kills, like, she's a part of a triplet, and she definitely kills one of the twins.
Yeah.
One of the triplets. So it could be a Blake Lively situation. Back in the room. Spoil it over.
Yes. I think I'm going to... Ooh, but this is bad.
So what's the last one?
That's a bad question. I think I'm going to go with my twin. Because, at least in this case, they know that they have to do it.
Are we saying this is within the trial? In trial 3?
I would say so. Trial 3, yeah. And they know that it has to be done. I'm gonna go with twin. Like, I choose my best friend. I don't choose my twin. So
you could have done early and eaten the twin in the womb. Got out of the way at early stage.
Could have.
Missed an opportunity there.
Yeah. What do you say?
I'm gonna say twin because I'm sure, you know, there's something that happened in our childhood that I can hold on to and resent them for and use that as the fuel to fire the rage of murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a bad question.
I feel like an absolute garbage person.
Yeah, well, there's lots of garbage people in this series, so.
Yeah.
In this first book, so.
Yeah.
It's fine. Okay, last question. Would you rather be Lya or Elias?
Elias, he's got some mad skills. He could survive, you know, he could go off into the desert and he could survive. Whereas Lya is 100% dependent on people. Yes, she got over the whole cowardly thing. Yes, she managed to rig lots of explosives around Blackcliff and, you know, do the whole trickery. But she is not a survivor. Whereas I think Elias has, with his background, you know, grown up with the tribes and, you know, his military training and, you know, what his grandfather's taught him. I think he's probably, in a different way, he's a survivor. So I'd rather, and plus he's got some mad fighting skills that, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm gonna be Elias too.
Is that so you sound like Steve West?
So at least I didn't say that I want to be Lya because she ends up, you know, probably having relationship with Elias. So at least I didn't say it that way.
They did smooch in his room when they had the rom-com night.
They did. They did. And I don't want to be Lya. But I bet as the series progresses, she becomes a better person, and I might want to be her in the future. But right now, book one, I do not want to be Lya. I will be Elias. Okay, that's the end. That's the end of Would You Rather.
Cool. That was horrendous.
It was. It was bad. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's been a while since I've had about a gruesome one.
Has been. So do we have final thoughts?
We do. We like to do quotes from the book that kind of stand out to us for final thoughts, but, you know, I don't really want to quote the Commandant because that would be very bad.
Probably best not to do that.
I'm going
to
take the lesson from Lya. Believe in yourself. Believe in what you're capable of. Believe in what you can and can't do, and don't be afraid to ask for help. But also forgive yourself. You know, you're not a superhero. You don't have magic powers in theory, so kind of know your capabilities and, you know, forgive yourself because it's not always your fault. What about you?
So my final thought this time is it's not based on the book. Steve West could read anything and I would listen to it. That is my final thought.
I really want to know if Steve West has done some kind of really obscure trashy thing that he's not entirely proud of, you know, at the beginning of his career, and then I want you to listen to it and go, yeah, I'm gonna buy that antihistamine commercial product.
If he did, he probably did it. If he did do that, he probably did it under a different name. And, you know, Steve West probably isn't his real name. I learned in my voice classes that I've taken that when you're starting out, or if you're going to do something, say read an audiobook that you are not proud of, that you assign yourself a different name.
Yeah. Have you got one picked out?
I do. I do have one picked out. Mm-hmm. I do.
Don't advertise it.
I'm prepared.
Excellent.
I'm prepared to get into it.
Excellent. I want to hear all of Amanda's things in my ear holes.
Okay. Because of the accent of the week, is that why?
Yeah. God, that was a terrible laugh.
But we really, now, I know that we've joked about doing Accent of the Week, but I think that it really has to be done, because when I posted about my book, Dawn Kurtigich said she wanted to hear. And because she said that, I think we actually have to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I said, yes, I'm going to do, definitely we'll do it. But I feel like we've been joking about it, but I really think it has to be done.
No, I think it does. And then, at the very least, you have some kind of reference point back to see how your accent's changed.
I can listen back to it and go, oh my God, why did I do that? It's like having the first episode of this podcast going, ugh, don't go back to that one. It was really bad. And so now I can do the same thing with my accents.
Exactly, exactly. So it's all good. It's all good. It's all good.
Okay. Now let me take a mo and grab my book. And I think I don't want to do a whole lot. I don't want to read a whole monologue.
No, that's why, I mean, obviously it would be easier if we had a sentence, but...
we just had a sentence.
Yeah, that, like, the same sentence, but, like, because that would be a good compare and contrast.
So what if I just used our tagline? Accent of the Week. Cockney.
What the heck am I listening to?
You're listening to me learn.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first... Accent of the Week.
The only cure for a fictional hangover is another book. The only cure for a fictional hangover is another book. The only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
Shine your shoes, Governor.
I should see now if I learn this, if I can just fall into Cockney without having to think about it eventually, then I can just be Spoo. So I have to get really, really good at Cockney, especially for the next episode. So maybe, since there are...
Hey, Lady Captain!
Oh, Lady Captain! Since there are 24 accents, maybe I should do a couple of, like, it should have a couple of week of Cockney, and so here's my first week, and so next week it will be better.
Yes.
And then I can do it up here, and I will learn that I can be Spoo on Alien.
Yes.
Oh, get up a little bit higher then. Lady Captain. Okay, so there's one segment that needs music, and this segment also needs something, but I'm doing it this time. Wahaha. If you liked this, try this. Fanfare. Yes. So, reading this book, man, I am snorting a lot today. Reading this book really put me in the same mindset that I had when I was reading Red Rising by Pierce Brown. It just really made me think of the series. And reading this summary, which I'm going to do in just a moment, you're going to think, why in the world do you think these books are similar? But it's because there's a lot of Roman influence in Red Rising as well as there was in this one. So, Darrow is a Red, one of 1,000 men and women who live in the vast caves beneath the surface of Mars, generations of people who spend their lives toiling to mine the precious elements that will allow the planet to be terraformed. Just knowing that one day people will be able to walk the surface of the planet is enough to justify their sacrifice. The Earth is dying, and Darrow and his people are the only hope humanity has left. Until one day, Darrow learns that it's all a lie. Mars has been habitable and inhabited for generations by a class of people calling themselves the Golds, a class of people who look down at Darrow and his fellows as slave labor to be exploited and worked to death without a second thought. Until the day Darrow, with the help of a mysterious group of rebels, disguises himself as a Gold and infiltrates their command school, intent on taking down his oppressors from the inside. But the command school is a battlefield, and Darrow isn't the only student with an agenda. So there's lots of rebels and battles and legionnaires and such in that series. But it's sci-fi, not fantasy, because it's set on Mars.
Sci-fi and fantasy are cousins, you know. They are
cousins, but this one is definitely... rated. This one is definitely sci-fi and not fantasy because the places actually do exist.
Yeah.
And it is potential that you could go from a dying Earth to Mars.
Yeah.
On spaceships, and they do fly around in spaceships eventually.
Yeah.
In the series.
I think if sci-fi had got a little bit further along in the listener choice polls, this probably would have been one of the picks.
Probably would have been. It's a good series. But it has six, and like there's the first three, and then 10 years or whatever later, there's the second three. So I haven't read the second three yet.
Yeah.
But the first three, it was pretty good. Although it did take me a little bit to get into the first one, which is similar with this one. It took me a little bit to get into it, but I still really did like it. And yeah. It's the same with Red Rising. So it all just kind of felt very similar.
It seems very tonally the same. You know, the whole resistance slave master, you know, kind of dynamic. Yeah.
And so then also doing research on Goodreads, which we've mentioned Goodreads a lot in this episode, so I'll just go ahead and say it here again. Nevernight came up as a, like, people also liked to read this. And since we discussed Nevernight on the show, not you and I, but since Nevernight was covered on the show in episodes 50, 51, and 52, I thought it might be fair to mention it here. And I really feel like I probably don't have to read a summary because there were episodes about it, but
Go listen to the episodes.
Like, go and listen to the episodes for sure.
I did.
There's lots of murder and revenge.
Yes. And those as well. And then go and check out Amanda's cosplay from those episodes because they're freaking awesome.
Those I really think were my favorite to do.
Oh, you've done a lot of fantastic cosplay. Like, wow, your game this year has been on point. But those were pretty freaky. Like, I thought you'd murdered someone at one point, or like gone to the butcher shop. It was that bad. Yeah. Or bloody.
But no, it was just Jacob standing over me, constantly pouring Halloween blood on my head.
Jacob must not be surprised at any of your requests anymore. It's like, honey, can you just come to the bathroom a second? Yes. Just pour this blood on me. Okay.
Yep, he's just like, okay, he's fine with it. And actually that one we did not do in the bathroom. We did it in the hallway because there was a nice clear bit of wall behind. And I had to ask him to go to the store on his way home and purchase a shower curtain so I could spread it out on the floor. And then he poured blood all over me. And then we just wrapped it up and threw it away. And I really wanted to put in our garbage bag, like, this is not from a murder scene. This is fake blood. But I didn't.
And you haven't been arrested yet, so it's fine.
Yeah, so it's fine. It's all good. All good. So that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss the final book in the Custard Protocol series, Reticence, by Gail Carriger. Contact us on social media if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. And now on Goodreads at www.goodreads.com/fictionalhangover. And finally, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and on Patreon. Thanks for listening.